Why we need all this firepower to protect it?
Could be anything, from a briefcase nuke to the original copy of the Constitution. But the one written in the Founding Fathers' blood.
Right. We're like, Bigfoot.
I was thinking more like headpiece of the Staff of Ra, or Amelia Earhart, but alive. So less you know, the better.
True.
Easy peasy, lemon squeezy.
This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Everyone, welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 514. My name is Scott Johnson, joined today by Brian, this four horsemen. Copy that, mothership, Dunaway. I meant this is four horsemen. I screwed up and left a thing out. Anyway, go ahead there, Brian Dunaway.
Hi, giddy up. Oh, hi. Guys, it's not good. I just saw the boss carrying the undead queen's body down the Vegas Strip. Minus her head, and I'm pretty sure he noticed the head thing. Okay, so here's what we're going to do. We shamble our undead decaying bodies over to the ill-kept casino hotel pool, taking care not to make any contact with the boss. Looking at you, Bill. Nobody wants to be stared at with those dried-up, dangly balls of yours flopping around outside the eye socket. Gross! Plus, who are you even looking at? Is it me? Is it Bub? Oh, hi, Bub. Shh, shh, here he comes. Look natural. Okay, he's gone. Dude, Bub, did I hear you growling brains? Are you just trying to get us more undead? Not to mention, the 80s called, and they want their zombie tropes back. Anywho, man, you know you hear about decapitations, but you rarely see them. And like, her whole head was just gone, and that is a shocking thing to see. But I gotta say, I think the boss can make it work. No, hear me out. No head? No back talk. Am I right? Oh, that's the line. That's where it is. Okay. And now I'm the bad guy. Look, I'm just saying, some guys are into mermaids and that is all bottom half fish stuff and nobody judges those guys. Why can't the boss be into headless undead ladies? All right. I'm hearing it. Take it back. Dried up bunch of prudes. Okay. Looks like the boss man has had another poolside meeting. Let's get over there and find out. Holy crap. Was she pregnant? What? Don't look at me, Bill. You know I would never touch the boss's wife. We were just friends. Not to mention, my junk fell off months ago. I cried for a week. Oh, you weren't looking at me? Seriously, man. Either get those balls clipped or shove them back into your sockets. Oh, wait. He's holding up his undead fetus like Simba in that movie Lion King. Nasaganya! Baba Kee! Oh, what? It's a circle of life. Okay. Now he's headed over this way. Great. Randy, stall him with a story about that one time you had a job cleaning pools in Vegas. I think I can climb those freight boxes with the proper motivation. Woohoo!
It'd be hilarious if you predicted his thing about the pool job. What pool was that supposed to be? Could you tell? Was that a famous pool or like a thing I should know?
I think it was a made up. It wasn't one that I recognized. There's a few places on the strip I haven't stayed, but. I didn't recognize that.
It was supposed to be right. It was supposed to be in the Olympus, and I looked up.
Oh, was it just the Olympus?
Okay. Yeah, the Olympus is a fake. Yeah,
yeah. I love a fake casino. We'll get to all that in a second. With us also today, Randy, Container Park done got a lot bigger. Jordan,
aloha, Scott, Brian. This X-ray Niner Alpha. We are clear of base with the package convoy underway. Over. What are we hauling? I don't know, Jackson. What's our cargo? Jackson doesn't know either, but I'm the wise guy of this unit, so I've got some pretty good ideas of what it might be. We might be hauling one of the following six things. Number one, the Colonel's actual original recipe written on black paper in hairs from his goatee. Number two, it might be the lost 13th and 14th steps that make 12-step programs work. Whoa. Number three, I think it's raw milk that's legal for sale. That's right. You heard me. Number four. It's footage of a UFO that isn't easily explained by every camera expert on the internet. Number five, it might be helicopter parts that you can set on fire and destroy and then fix to working condition in like 15 minutes so the helicopter can immediately fly crazy stunts. Or number six, we've been talking about this, it might be explosives that you can detonate a few feet down a hallway without wearing ear protection. Mm. Hang on. Jackson just crawled back into the cargo compartment to get a look. You okay back there, buddy? Oh, you're back. Oh, hey, I'm trying to drive, Jack. Jackson, why are you kissing my neck? We're on duty. Oh, that's nice. Crap, I'm still on the radio and transmission.
Mm. You had me at, ooh, that's nice.
I love the UFO stuff.
Yeah, I like that.
Ripped from the headlines.
There were UFOs in that scene where he went over the hill, which we'll get to that too. And also the robots. Mm-hmm. There's some weird shit in this movie.
There's weird shit.
Yeah. Finally, Brian, hey, I think I found a load of covers of classic songs you could use. Ibbit.
You did. Hi there, Mr. Zombie. Excuse me, Mr. Zombie, sir. Hi. Hey, how long are you going to be in town? You wanted to see any shows while you're here? Maybe go to a club? No, don't walk away. Dude, okay. I've got a really exciting opportunity for you. Look, you're here. You're looking for brains to eat. Sorry, Brian. But see, you really want the deluxe Vegas experience. Am I right? Why just eat brains when you can eat brains served to you by some of television's greatest celebrity chefs? Maybe a show? There are 37 Cirque du Soleil shows here in Vegas, and you can see any one. Oh, the alpha zombies are all former Cirque performers. Okay, scratch that. Magic. Yes, there are magic shows here, like Siegfried and Roy and their amazing white tie. Oh, yeah, it's right over there, isn't it? Okay, no problem. I see you're here with your lovely wife and your... Oh, you're expecting? All right, if you have a spare 3 hours, I've got an amazing opportunity for you. Can you say timeshare? Oh, you can't? Okay, I got nothing. Just go ahead and eat me. Fine, go ahead and eat me. Wait, where are you going? What, Vegas timeshare salesman not good enough for you?
The answer is always yes to that question, by the way. They're never good enough for anyone. Well, there you have it. Oh, my gosh. We did a thing here on the show, which is now, I guess, an official record, because even if you could sort of count Force Awakens, which we all talked about the weekend it came out, but we didn't do a real episode. It was more like a hangout and review Star Wars in its big comeback form. This is the closest we've been from release to sack in its full in the history of the show. So congratulations, yeah. Everyone. We did it.
We did it.
Probably the perfect time
they
for that. Actually,
it couldn't be done, and yeah. We did it.
But there's probably more opportunity like this because you know the way the world works right now. A lot of the stuff's coming to streaming day and date. Sometimes at the same time it's in theaters, which this movie qualifies as that. And the more that happens, the more opportunities we might have. So you know, stay tuned. But Army of the Dead seemed perfect for what we do here, and I'm here to tell you I think it was exactly what we should have done.
Yeah.
We've done a great service to our community and to the world. Zack yeah. Snyder's Army yeah. of the Dead, available on Netflix right now and also in theaters, and currently the record holder for 2021's box office haul as of yesterday. So it's doing good, although it's not number one on Netflix. Number one is some kids movie.
It was number one on my Netflix all week. Every day I check Netflix.
Weird. And it may be jumping around.
That Army of the Dead was number one.
I wonder if that changes. See, I never know when that algorithm's
talking.
Were you
looking at the regional? Because they do the regional charts and then they do the national charts. I wonder if you were looking at
I'm looking at the one
something.
That just says 1 through 10 and they always say top.
Yeah, that's why I looked at it too. Yeah. I don't think it was number one every time. But
it may have changed around. I don't know.
But I didn't pay that much attention.
I think that's really curated. We're talking about a curated thing in every line on Netflix. Like everything except maybe your list that you've saved.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. Stupid.
There's some algorithms working on you.
So right now, okay, now it's switching around. Right now, Lucifer and its new season is number one. Number two, DreamWorks Home. That's the one with like Sheldon in it. It's an animated deal from DreamWorks. And then three, Doggone Trouble, another animated Netflix original. And then Army of the Dead. Last night it was number two. And then during the week it was number one. I think, who knows, dude? I can't trust this.
I think mine says top 10 in the U.S. today. And then it lists like what you just said, had the same
Yeah, mine says listing. Top 10 US as well. Who knows, though? I don't trust anything on the internet.
As much as we're celebrating doing this very quickly, the movie has been available on Netflix for 8 days now, and right. I'll bet you this is a really front-loaded watch. I'll bet you.
Oh, yeah. Everybody's waiting for it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people mm-hmm. watched it last weekend, and, you know, like, there's still going to be a big number every day for a while, mm-hmm. but... like any other movie release, you know, it's the first 3 days that really count.
Yeah, for sure. And it, you know, we would have probably actually done it sooner, except we had a trip out of town last week for a couple of us. So things got delayed, but, mm-hmm. but here we are, we finally got to it. We got to Vegas. There's all sorts of undead there. Zack Snyder coming off of his cut. He just finished his cut. See? So he hopped over here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Does he even cut though? Does he cut, bro?
I don't know if he cuts, bro.
I don't know.
He's a cutter. But he came over here and he said, hey, what if I went back to some of my roots? 2004's Dawn of the Dead remake. Oh, why is that playing? Holy shit.
Take two.
I don't know why that was playing.
Scott Johnson cut.
I don't know what happened there. That seriously, it just launched and started playing. That was weird. But anyway, that movie's awesome. Dawn of the Dead remake is still my favorite Zack Snyder movie. Yeah, this is not anywhere near that in terms of quality, in my opinion, but it's fun to see him return to some of those roots. You know, it's like, hey, zombies, remember those and stuff. And the difference here is it's, you know, this is not a George Romero deal joint mm-hmm. or remake. Right. It's not even connected in any way, but boy, some of these zombies look like they were from those like 80s looking zombie movies.
Yeah. I mean, you zombies are a thing that looks wise don't really change. You know, we can add all these new powers or requirements or lore, or like, oh, now they have a queen and now they're like alpha zombies and these other pleb zombies and things like that.
They're pretty much decaying flesh, right? I mean,
right, yeah.
How far can
looks
you
wise go? Shredded clothing,
yeah,
but so but I'm
bathed in weeks.
I will say, I think that, say, Walking Dead has better makeup people and better effects people when it comes to zombies. I thought these guys look like a bunch of people doing modern dance, you know?
I think that's okay, because I think that may have been, this is all speculation, but I think the fact that Snyder went with these lenses he bought off eBay.
Yes, the dream lenses.
Yeah, these dream lenses that are, you know, have a very, very short focal length, which makes everything blurry on the outside, really helps a lot, because you don't have to dress up as much in the background with zombies. No.
I'm sorry. There were a lot of digital after effects depth of field in this movie. Yes, there were a lot of shots that had a really long depth of field, but there was a lot of it done digitally. I got into the bad habit of looking at the women's hair whenever they were in focus, and the background was so blurry that it could have been the, you know, the Los Angeles streets, you know?
Yeah, it probably was. Yeah, I think that was what was kind of bothering me. I was I'm one who's always looking in the whenever there's a movie like set in Vegas or someplace I'm really familiar with, let's face it, Vegas, I'm looking in the background to see, okay, where are they supposed to be at? Is that the right hotel that should be next to that hotel?
And they didn't shoot in Vegas, so that would
Yes, they did. Like, if you watch the making of afterward, this is 20-minute little documentary about how they made it. Boy, did they shoot in Vegas! They held up traffic in Las Vegas to get all kinds of these scanner shots for hours and days, where they you know, they reconstructed a 3D Las Vegas in a computer.
My problem wasn't so much that because I thought the strip and the surrounding areas of the strip, you know, like Vegas Central, looked like about right. They got a lot of the geography right, but my head was kind of screwed up was the sprawling neighborhoods and other districts and things that are all around Vegas. It's just as if they just ignored all that. It's just not there.
Yeah, exactly. It's like in the very opening scene, pre-credits opening scene, the zombie steps up on the mountain, looks and sees the Vegas Strip and all of these neighborhoods and lights between him and there.
Yeah, it's a huge
and
city.
Then the next shot of Vegas, it is like they ripped up the strip and dropped it into the middle of the salt flats
or
something.
It was very self-contained. You're right. And also the angle that they came at, that was all wrong. There's no way they were transporting that thing on some highway behind there. There's no highway back there on that side of the strip and then walking up to the edge.
As someone who has never been to Vegas, I didn't know what he did.
Well, of course not. Because, you know, if you don't know, then it works. And that's what they're counting on. And it's fine. It's like 90% of hand waving in movies. It's like, people don't know computers. So we'll do this hacker scene and everyone will think it's fine because they don't know, because they're not all hackers. But there's always somebody who notices.
Right.
In a movie like this, though, it was really hard for me not to notice some of that stuff. But in the city proper, the digital sort of recreation, everything outside of this Olympus casino that doesn't exist, it looked pretty dead on to me. You know, most of that looked like Vegas. I was in there. And I love that. Let me get this out right now. My favorite apocalyptic destroyed human center is Vegas. I love that concept. Fallout New Vegas is my favorite Fallout game. I love The Stand for mostly that reason. I've read The Stand 5 times because they end up in Vegas so much. And I love it as a construct for that. So
Blade Runner 2049.
Oh, right? Another great one. Exactly.
Like I was like freaked out. I'm watching that movie and suddenly they're going to Vegas. I'm like, what? Yeah. That is such a detour. Mm. But then they got there and I'm like, oh, this is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a really good idea because, I mean, there's no city that's more bright and alive than Vegas. And when it is dead, it's like, wow.
Yeah.
And gives you so many opportunities for environmental zombie interaction.
Right.
Having slot machines and stuff that can fall over or explode, or Paris, you know, Eiffel Tower landing on a pile of zombies, things like that.
Right.
It just gives you a lot of environmental effects that you can play with.
Yeah, just a fun.
You can have Zeus stand on top of the Statue of Liberty. Yeah. I mean, that's amazing. Yes.
That looked really cool. And
apparently, he can climb this unbelievable thing.
I know,
but he can't climb over some container boxes.
Well, okay. So it's one of the core. It's one of the core conceits of this particular zombie movie. They've got their shamblers, and it's classes. Right. And some zombie movies do this. I'm not always cool with this. I kind of like the arcade style of this movie in the sense that I couldn't take anything too seriously, so I had fun with these tropes. But we got the alphas and we got the shamblers. The shamblers are dumb and just wander around and die in the sun. And the alphas can do freaking parkour until their hearts give out. Like
you just reminded me of one of the things I hate the most about Zack Snyder stories. And I'm not going to spend this whole podcast ragging on Zack Snyder. This is a fun film. Mm. I enjoyed the movie. Mm. I think, I would have rather pretty much anybody make it. Like I think it could have benefited from literally any other filmmaker, but it's fine. It was fun. It was very exciting. It was a good runtime. I think I've seen a lot of people who say it's too long. I think it was fine. I could have gone longer, but as a storyteller, this guy, Jesus, Zack Snyder, like he's just bad, you know, like he's bad. We got our crew together and they first go inside the zombie zone, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They
zombie
first zone. Get in there.
52 minutes into the film.
They've established an expert on what's going on in there. And she says, hey, see all these piles of zombie corpses? Well, it's because we're in the desert, they eventually dry out. Later in the movie, you see ample evidence that zombies are filled with explosive blood. Mm-hmm. But never mind that.
Yeah.
These ones, they dry out.
Yeah.
You should see it when it rains and they all start moving again.
Yeah.
And then you know what never happens the rest of the movie?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was really waiting. I was thinking, oh, that's totally foreshadowing. All right, we're going to, you know, get a Bellagio water explosion that's going to revive all the
that's on my list zombies. Of buckets.
Grab a bucket.
That's on my list of buckets. That and the dude that left early from the YouTube guy, and he couldn't understand why he left. And I remember thinking, well, why? Even
I kept going, oh, he's going to betray everybody. He's going to go totally tattle. Yeah,
right. They never did
now,
do that.
With that being said, it's kind of like a Michael Bay movie. At this point, you've seen so much Zack Snyder. If you come into a Zack Snyder film and expect anything other than Zack Snyder, you might as well just, you know, that's on you.
I'll tell you what. So, okay, James Gunn wrote the original Dawn of the Dead remake, the 2004 one he directed. And James Gunn did a killer job. It's a really funny juxtaposition of James Gunn in this film because James Gunn was asked to write this one as well. He turned it down because he was busy with the new Suicide Squad. That also includes Dave Bautista not taking the Suicide Squad gig and doing this instead. He was going to play a character there. So there's all kinds of back and forth. But those guys are longtime collaborators. And I think James Gunn wrote a better – it was a remake, so, you know, maybe better source material. But wrote a better zombie movie in that.
Zomber.
And Zack Snyder's just not as good of a writer. I think Zack Snyder can do some badass shit with like visuals and style when it's not his writing. And that would include 300. I would put in Watchmen in there. I would put in a few others. Yes. But when he goes and does it on his very own, I'm with Randy that he's not a great writer for sure. And
I agree. There's, as far as characters go, he's not good at it. He just paints with big, you know, broad strokes.
Right.
But that's fine. That's because when I watch a Zack Snyder film, I'm there for the visual spectacle. You know, it's like, give me something that I've never seen before. Oh, wow. Zombies in daylight, just hardcore neon colors. I mean, that opening scene and the whole, you know, okay, so there's a whole opening scene that is full of chaos and just all this neon like you would expect to see in Vegas.
Are you talking about the credits or post?
Yeah, the opening credits.
Yeah, the credits.
And that was great because I had that, which song did they play there? Now I'm forgetting them.
Viva Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Richard Cheese and Alison Krauss.
That's
and
right.
Let me just say this right now. So you got Richard Cheese, who's been a guest on my show, and we won't even bring up the thing in Vegas.
No. So is it Dick Cheese?
Yeah, Dick Cheese.
Okay.
Alison Krauss, who's been an interview on Coverville, and Danielle Brugio, who was our guest on America's Next Top Podcaster as our interview guest. So that opening credit sequence has three Coverville connections right there.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. She's the one that got smushed by the container, right?
She's the one that got smushed by the container, with the grabbing her daughter, and
that was awesome.
And Tiger. And she's the one in the, you know, that you see beforehand when they're doing the weird thing in the credits that I kind of liked, but I wanted more of, which is you see them fighting zombies, but then it's like they're standing in front of a portrait screen holding a photo of what they were in their previous to zombie hunting life.
Yeah.
And she's a soccer mom.
Yeah.
I wanted more of it, or I wanted something like for four people, and it was like, okay, what, you know,
this is very much a Zack Snyder thing, and this is one of my favorite things about him. His intro his opening credit sequences in all his movies are some of my favorite things and most memorable things. The Watchmen intro with that
Times They Are a Changing,
that song, while it's that crazy, I mean, it's slow-mo, so big shock from Zack Snyder, but that is such a cool juxtaposition of music and film and tone. And the opening of that movie is almost perfect. I freaking love it. I thought this was really great for similar reasons. And some of that stuff where they're like suddenly taking pictures over backdrops with a photo of what they used to be is great world building, character building. And then why?
It's a good setup.
Then he just gave that stuff up and we were just left with whatever. And it's fine. But
Right.
You know, like the mom played by the lady you mentioned, she was awesome. She was our favorite. She was my favorite guest you had on this season or any season. I thought she was awesome.
She was great.
We got kind of a whole story of her in very brief moments, and it was great. Yeah, it was really good. And then she died, and I was like, oh, shit, I'm not going to know her anymore. Yeah.
Zack Snyder really shines when he doesn't have a lot to do. When it's not a scene doesn't require that he direct a lot of weird, wacky stuff. Like when the opening sequence with the, you know, with the convoy that gets hit by a car where a guy is driving right. while orgasm.
You think he's okay? How about his penis? You think it's
definitely not.
You think that's okay?
She bit
but like
off.
the wrecks and the mayhem that happened there is small. Yeah. It's right. Like you have some explosions where you've, you know, loaded up those vehicles with gasoline bombs. Mm-hmm. And then you have the immediate aftermath of that, which is really only two guys. And they're sort of like just running across the desert. Right.
Yeah.
I thought, man, this is really good filmmaking. Zack Snyder, like the movie's starting. And I'm like, Zack Snyder, where were you for your Snyder cut? Geez, this is really like these guys are, you know, I can see them clearly. I can hear them clearly. Mm-hmm. That you've not gone and CGI'd out a bunch of stuff and made me wonder what you're hiding from me. Like there's other scenes in this movie that are like that. Scenes in a hallway where Dave Bautista is just talking about his food truck idea, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, man, Zack Snyder knows how to. How's it shoot this stuff? Mm-hmm. You know, like there's some good parts
there's
of this
moments.
Movie.
Yeah.
I wish it was more of that.
Yeah.
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 Some of that stuff's pretty good. But again, it just feels like it stops too quickly, or a zombie yells before the daughter or father bond is fixed, or, you know, I don't know. There's some disjointedness here that just doesn't work. if you're looking for really great storytelling. But what you do get is a big ass violent arcade gore fest.
Yeah.
And that's what I was in for, and I enjoyed it on that level a lot. I wasn't really looking for any more than that. Now, where I'm unsure to feel or how to feel is noticing toward the end of the film myself, and then looking it up and then finding out there's 100 of these references. There's robot zombies in this movie.
Okay. Right. And, no, hold on. No, I went way far on this. I read everything that everybody said about this. And there are not necessarily robot zombies in this film. There is a mystery in this film that they deliberately put out in front of you for you to catch and question. But there is absolutely nothing said by any of the filmmakers.
Well, Zack Snyder here's what Zack Snyder said. Zack Snyder said, we put these in because we want you to wonder, are there robot zombies? Are these plants from the government keeping track of things? What are these? Why are those two UFOs floating above Vegas before all this goes down? Like they've inserted a bunch of weird shit that they don't, they haven't given us exact answers on. You're right, Randy, but they put them in there. Those are metal faces with glowing blue eyes and, you know.
Yeah. I'd just like to explain what I saw and ask you guys if you saw the same thing. Okay. So this is like the most basic explanation I've got. At the start of the film, there is allegedly one zombie in this universe. There's one and government.
He's military. From his presentation, shortcut.
Mm-hmm. You know, we assume so. Yeah,
right. Military pants. Yeah. Right.
So we can make some assumptions about how he got to be a zombie, right? And and we can definitely ask some questions about how bad the military is in this movie. but like the most basic answer anyone's going to arrive at is always the whole zombie virus came from outer space. That's just something that everybody always goes to.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It fell from the sky, and we have a zombie, right?
And they were saying to come out of Area 51, or they implied it.
Yeah, they implied that they were just leaving Area 51 and for some reason headed really, really close to Vegas. Like they just drove straight to Vegas with their zombie. Okay. And as we get into the city later, we find out, there's two general kinds of zombies, right? The shamblers that are your typical ones, and then these alphas who have all kinds of zombie magic.
Yeah.
And we don't care. As an audience, we don't really care. We don't need the movie to explain zombie magic because it's just supposed to be thrilling and scary.
Yeah. Right? And if you played Left 4 Dead, you understand zombie classes. Mm-hmm. They exist. Mm-hmm. You know, you got a fat one that explodes. You got the fast one that jumps on you, you know,
and
all that.
And I'm going to try to speed up here. So the alphas, zombies, there's a small number of them. They're making each other. They're making more somehow. We don't care how. They have two leaders. They have a king and a queen zombie. And she is constantly doing yoga. I don't know.
She is. Yeah.
She constantly does yoga.
Awesome. Yoga moves.
She's freaking awesome.
Yeah. She does wild pose. Yeah. And the husband zombie looks like Fred Willard. I'm sorry.
Let's be ill of the dead. Aww.
I'm getting off track. Getting off track. Anyway, King and Queen Zombie are the leaders that we're supposed to like be slowly uncovering a mystery about what the hell's going on for them.
Yeah.
But we see them interacting and relating. They're like people. Unlike a lot of other zombie stories, there's something here where they have relationships, they have feelings, they cry. Like there's all kinds of things. By the way, sorry if this is spoiling this movie for you, but
If you're listening to this and you haven't seen the movie that just came out a week ago, you're crazy.
Yeah, you should do that.
But anyway, you know, we have a bad guy. Of course, every group of mercenaries has a stand-in that nobody likes and questions, and he's a bad guy. And the bad guy cuts the head off the queen, right? Because he
Dillahunt.
Yeah, he figures that's really, really valuable. And now we've activated the anger of the king, who comes out, reaches into the queen's lifeless body, and pulls out a fetus that she was carrying.
Yeah, blue fetus.
But by the way, she was lifeless before... but anyway, go ahead.
He goes back to his council of alphas and pulls this fetus out and holds it up, and it's bright blue. It is alien. It is clearly, we are being told by this movie's visuals, this is an alien species. That is what happens.
It could have just been like, you know, lack of air, oxygen, blue kind of thing.
It is glowing with light, alien light. And it looks like a little alien. Like, that's the story we're being told.
Have you seen a fetus, baby? They look like aliens.
Feel free to disagree with me when I'm done here. But he pulls the fetus out. It's growing bright blue like an alien. And that tells me that we now have a third generation. We have the Shamblers, we have the Alphas, and when the Alphas breed, they're making this alien thing because, again, the zombie virus came from space. So now he holds it up. It's glowing bright blue. It dies finally. It was apparently somehow living, and it dies, and it turns into, you know, basically a lifeless dark thing. And then, of course, he cries. Anyway, that whole thing, when the camera pulls back and he's screaming and everybody in the pool room is screaming, you see there are other Alphas that have blue light shooting out of their eyes. They have that alien feature inside them already, you know, somehow. And then later, some of those get killed. That's the end of that whole mystery. We see them like in the casino floor. They get killed, and there's like a explosion of their head, and whatever's inside their head is this like blue metallic, you know, weird thing. Right. But that's supposed to all be connected,
really,
right?
Really resisting not singing "What's in Your Head." What's in your head? Okay, go ahead.
Right, which is also in the movie, right?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Yes.
All right, so
it's not like when you just say robots, I think you don't do the story justice.
Okay, but there is a point. What I'm saying is there are scenes where they're shooting it and the bullets ricochet through the flesh outer shell, very very Terminator like, by the way, and reflect and these bullets are flying off and making sounds and sparks off of like chrome faces, and if you slow them down at all, you see it very clearly. They've got these glowing, you know, LED looking eyes. There are robot-y dudes in there. I mean, here's his actual quote is what he said. He said this: I had the idea from the very beginning that these zombies were going to embody an evolution, that they were on their way to becoming something else, not stagnant like zombies were used to. It was a way to make them fresh, still delivering the zombie canon in some ways. I really wanted this sort of weird ambiguity to their origins, which, of course, we'll explore in the animated series Army of the Dead Lost Vegas, which is coming, I guess. He also said, and without giving too much away, if you pay close attention, and this is him offering this up, if you pay close attention, there's a number of zombies that are clearly not zombies. You will see zombies, and then you will see some robot zombies. These are monitors that the government has placed among the zombies to monitor them? Are they technology from another world? What's happening there? Unquote. So he even confirms these are robot zombies, but we don't know why.
If a zombie bites one of the animatronic Caesar's characters in the forum hall or forum mall, could that animatronic Caesar then turn into a zombie?
Whoa.
See, that's the question we need to explore. Yeah. See, this is what works well for what he's doing. He's world building, which I think he's pretty good at. Yeah. As far as character writing, maybe not so great.
Well, visually, he's a very good world builder, for sure.
Visually, he's amazing. Yeah. And listen, he has just inspired us to talk about all of these possibilities of taking zombies beyond just the undead. Right. That's pretty amazing. To inspire others is basically what you're trying to do when you're creating art.
And you do a zombie movie, you feel like you do have to add something new to it.
Your own
Vegas is obviously one of the new things here, but then you've also got to give them that you hibernate them for some reason in weird
I like the
poses.
Subway hibernation, where it's like they all think they're still in the subway. I like how that's going on.
Now another note is he's obviously got plans for an extended universe. There is a prequel film that's coming to Netflix soon. I don't know the name of it, but it's the Dieter the Thief. I think it's called Thieves or something. Anyway,
Army of Thieves.
So it's all just about him safe cracking doing ice and shit.
Let's go through this cast, man. I want to start. Let's start with Dieter Matthias Schweighofer. That guy was amazing.
He was great.
He's great. Yeah,
I like him a lot.
When you first see him, I swear to God, I looked up to see if it was the same guy who was the deaf musician from Fifth Element.
Same
goofy curly hair and
not. But that guy's way older than Dieter here.
Older. Yes.
The Schweighofer would have been like 15 when that movie was made.
Yes, right.
Yeah, that dude's buff though. As much as they played him like the nerd, he had some. Yeah. He had some guns. But yeah, he's great. He cracked me up the whole time. I'm all for funny German actors. And every time he screamed, I just thought, oh, it's like me playing Resident Evil. That's freaking great. So yeah, he's great. And I like that he's getting a spinoff film for some reason. It might be shit, but I'm still
deserves it.
I'm still,
Hiroyuki Sanada.
Oh, he's always great.
Yeah. As the rich guy.
Yeah. He's
Scorpion. Bly Tanaka is the name of the character.
He's a he's never Scorpion. Not good. Yeah, he's always good. Scorpion in the new Mortal Kombat movie. He's great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And was in Wolverine.
Wolverine.
Right. He was in Wolverine. He was in Sunshine, which we saw recently. Yep. He was the captain.
Yeah, about 5 months ago we saw Sunshine.
It's great in that.
More recent.
Yeah. Name anything he's in. Westworld, all of it. Name something he's in where he doesn't elevate the material. And I defy you to find it. You can't.
Can't do it.
Speed Racer when he was Mr. Musha. I mean, that thing was already way up too high for him to even try.
There's no room to go up from there.
Was that
you know what? I'm not sure we've had a more contentious film than that one from people who keep writing in even now saying, you guys are all wrong on that movie. This is the greatest movie. I love that movie.
Of all things to, all hills to die
to plant
on.
Your flag. Yeah, it's like, that's it.
Yeah, people think it's some sort of classic.
It's a John Goodman, right? He's in that.
Yeah, but that's not. Right? I don't think that's why. I don't think John Goodman is. Their
that's
only
not
reason.
Their exhibit A in their defense.
No, they just think it's like the words used for me or by people to me have been endlessly rewatchable, which I completely disagree with. Wow. But whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever, man.
I believe it's endless.
Yeah, it feels that way. Does feel endless? Well, anyway,
I tell you, I'd be curious if the people who like Speed Racer also like Alita Battle Angel, because I love that film and I can watch that film over and over again. Speed Racer is okay, but
I never see it.
You know, I got lines to draw.
That felt like a movie we were going to do here, so I held off. You know?
Yeah. Have you never seen it?
No.
Yeah. No, I haven't seen it either.
You should definitely see it.
Because same things. Like, we'll watch this for films.
Even when it hit theaters, I was like, oh, big anime eye action girl. We're doing this for Film Sack. I will wait. But Dunaway waits for no man. He watches all men.
No, I must consume it.
No, he rewatches for all men. That's what you do. Hey, do you notice Anna de la Gurriga was the little nun lady from Nacho Libre? Yeah. She's the Nacho Libre nun, which is pretty
cool. Oh, I know her as the bad council person in Goliath.
Oh, Goliath!
Billy Bob Thornton, Billy Bob Thornton thing. Yeah,
I forgot about that. She's great in that.
She's like his main recurring enemy in that show.
Yeah, or frenemy sometimes.
Yeah, I thought of Nacho Libre every time she was on the
really.
I did too. I couldn't help it. That's all I could.
She's
think
just
of.
So funny in Nacho Libre because she's so like innocent and pure.
Yeah, yeah. No, she's great. Great.
You know who's a bad good guy? Or a good bad guy, Theo Rossi.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that guy in this film, but I was so disappointed that he didn't
Theo Rossi is security guard.
He's the
concentration camp police.
Rapist.
Rapist police. Right.
I mean, I'm not laughing at the term rape, everybody. I'm just saying this guy is the cheesiest.
For that to be the second descriptor word that comes out.
He's really something.
I wish the movie could have taken as much time with all of these side characters as it did with his. Like, it had to. It had to explain to you why we want to see Bert get killed and turned, and then we're excited to see him later as a zombie.
Yeah.
Right. It gives us that story. And I just wish it could have done that for everybody, because the movie has a team building montage, right? where two people, it's always two people travel the world to put their team together.
Yeah.
Right. And we just saw this in Expendables 3. Right. And, that montage is beautiful. I loved it. But it was like did no service to some of the characters, where they're just like, oh yeah, this is the weirdo who makes YouTube videos. Check on to the next one. And slow down. Yeah. Let me find out about this character.
By the way, YouTube's content restriction sure got laxed for this guy. He can shoot shoot stuff right in the head and get a bunch of likes and pull it down.
I guess amazing. When we have a zombie apocalypse, I guess they'll lighten up.
All bets are off.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, that character is named Mikey, and it's played brilliantly by Raul Castillo. Raul is a contemporary of mine. We grew up a few miles apart in the lower Rio Grande Valley.
Oh, that's cool.
And he, I've been following his career because he's a lot older than you might guess. He, like in this movie, he looks like he's 29.
Yeah, he's born in 77. He's in his 40s. And he looks really young for his age.
Wow. Yeah, he does.
Everybody in this thing is ripped. The guy that impressed me the most, I think, is Omari Hardwick, who played Vanderho.
Yeah, with that Jordan B. Peterson look.
Dude, just a...
Jordan B. Peterson? No. Michael R. Jordan? Michael B. Jordan? What's the look? What's
Michael
the guy?
Michael B. Jordan. Michael B. Jordan. Yeah.
Okay. That's who you're thinking of,
Michael
I believe,
B. Jordan,
right?
Like the whole movie. I looked this guy up because I'm like, this is...
He's a ripped, he's a monster, just a ripped dude. And I really found him. He's the one at the very end who's like on the plane and going to be your last, you know, he's your sequel connection.
But I wasn't sure if I wanted him to be the zombie on the plane or if I wanted to be the zombie on the ground. And I was also trying to figure out, was it supposed to be, you know, was it supposed to be a drop to something that's supposed to happen later? If this is supposed to be a prequel to something?
They're absolutely setting it up for more movies.
I can't believe this. I just looked up the ages of Omari Hardwick and Michael B. Jordan, and I don't believe it.
What?
Don't believe it.
They share the same birthday or what?
No. Oh. No. Omari Hardwick is 13 years older than Michael B. Jordan.
Nice. Good Lord.
How is that possible? I would have guessed, because like you saw Black Panther, Michael B. Jordan looks older than this guy.
Yeah, he's only he's 4 years older. Younger than us, than me and
Ibbot. How does Zack Snyder do this? How does he make these people in their 40s look like they're in their 20s?
I don't know. I mean, look, Hiroi Sanada, or however you say his name, was born in 1960. Dude is 60 years old. I'm sorry. That dude does not look 60.
If you had asked me just 5 seconds ago, I would have said I'd guess he was about 42, 44.
Yeah. And now Tig Notaro, I think she looks about 60. And
she's actually a little younger than that, my friend.
I know she's barely 50. Yeah. So I guess what I'm saying is we're all different.
By the way, we haven't talked about Tig Notaro yet, but I didn't read anything before the film. I didn't know anything about the film. I wanted to go in as fresh as possible. And I had no idea that her character was pretty much shot independently of everything else. I thought she was along with everybody else
entirely, because they had filmed everything already with
they did one they had her partner up with nun lady who we were just talking about, Anna
on the roof, right?
Anna de la Riguera. Yeah. They had the two of them pair up for a couple scenes that they reshot, but for the most part, her in front of a green screen with an acting partner to run lines by her.
Yeah, and the talk is that her and Dave Bautista still have never met in person. They don't know.
Really?
Yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah. Right. She was on one of the late shows. She was on Colbert or whatever, and she has this whole bit now that she does about finding out via Twitter that she's in a trailer for this movie. Like she had obviously she knew she had worked on the movie, and she has this whole story about what it was like to act alone with nothing but green around her and being told where to look. She has this bit about how there's all these people that she's in a movie with and she's never actually met them and been in the same place.
And I think it's damned impressive. Like Dunaway, you said you didn't even notice. You had no idea.
Yeah. I thought she did an amazing job, because I thought she did a competent job watching the film.
Dunaway, not knowing that Tig Notaro was a total add-in, did you notice anything different about her scenes in this movie? No.
I didn't notice anything until afterwards, and I was like, oh, okay, now I understand why
I feel like she
was a little bit further away from people.
To notice it, I feel like you need to know, because I don't think there was anything in here that was an absolute tell.
First scene with her is the most notable of those. Like the first scene, they come to meet her. They're on the other side of a fence. We never see a shot with all three characters in it at all. It's always her shot.
Yeah, but you'd never know
fence.
That if you didn't know she wasn't. Like if you didn't know about this deal, you just think that's a they're filming her on the other side of the fence. Like you never even question it.
Like I disagree.
Really?
In a lot of movies. And when you have people talking to each other, you try to establish that they're all in the same place.
Sometimes, like, yeah. But I don't think you would have gone, I'm pretty sure she's replaced some other actor who's filmed all these scenes already. Right. I don't think you'd say that.
If you're watching a movie close enough to see positioning of actors, then you're not paying attention to anything else. Because, I mean, you really have to be focused on that. Because we've trained our brains to accept a lot of these shots, you know? So, yeah. I mean, yeah, if you noticed it, it's because you're trying to notice it.
And her walking off going, you know, all right, $2 million, you know, whatever. I bought it all. I thought it all worked. I had no problem with it.
Yeah.
Very good. Like, she's just perfect for this. Yeah. I think it needs to be held against Zack Snyder that he originally had Chris D'Elia. Jesus, that was just a terrible idea. Like, it can't have possibly been better than what they got out of Tignataro.
Well, as far as I know, like, Chris D'Elia, he's a stand-up comedian, apparently a real a-hole, but I knew him from a podcast he used to do with Will Sasso, and I suppose he's funny, but the thing that set him apart was his comedy really never worked for me, but the thing that always seemed like his gig was, oh, he's kind of handsome and a comedian, a rare combo, you know, like I don't know, somehow that seemed like a rare thing, but as far as I know, I've never seen him in anything else. I think this was going to be his big break or something, right?
And yeah, then he's stand-up comedy,
as far as acting,
well, that's what I mean, his big acting break. So if he's busted for, you know, grooming 17-year-olds during when this film was basically wrapped, certainly principal filming was done. And then they were just like, you know what? I'm going to swap them all out. I'll give Zack Snyder credit for doing it. Like,
right. Yes, absolutely. Like Delia was Me Too'd a year ago. And to think that they were able to do what they did with Tignataro, it's just mind blowing. Like I say, if you don't know, most of the scenes with her, they have digitally put her into group shots, and it's right. They got the lighting right. They got the facing right. It's really well done.
Yeah. I went back and looked at like the middle third of the show, the middle third of the movie, and watched her scene specifically, watching her walking around talking directly with Batista about who's the most important, second most important, third most important people in the group. Mm-hmm. And it's amazingly done. It feels seamless at those times.
But actually, I could deal without that scene.
Really? I like that scene.
Because that whole scene, I was like, where is she going with this? I mean, going to leave somebody behind? Are they setting up something here? I didn't really feel
I
like
think they were just having fun off. And they needed some comedy and, you know.
Right.
You got Tignataro. And for all I know, none of
that dialogue existed. You've got Bert from Raising Hope in here. I mean, you want some comedy, that guy will deliver.
Yeah, but he's also goofball. Long before, I mean, Raising Hope is like the weird exception for him. His entire career, he's a dick. That's his job.
I know. But he's hilarious.
Yeah, everything. Name a movie.
He's the Paul Reiser, by the way, of this film.
He's the worst. The movie The Road, he's the guy you want to kill the most. He's a Terminator in that Terminator series, the Sarah Connor
Chronicles. Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's another thing that reminded me of Terminators in this movie. But he's always a dick. So, you know, in this, as soon as I saw him, I went, oh, back to your dick job. You're doing dick,
back
dick work.
Back to your dick ways.
Yep. Doing some dick work. You're going to dick everybody over and you'll be a dick. And your head will explode.
Well, and like you said, he's the polarizer of this, basically, where he's got a secret objective that endangers other people. And he, you know, he sabotages the woman as they're walking through with the glow sticks.
Yeah.
Sends her off a different direction, kind of like Paul Reiser locking Ripley in the room with a face hugger. There's another Aliens moment, too, because I wrote down two Aliens moments. When they come out onto the rooftop and the helicopter is gone.
Oh, it's Bishop. Like,
yeah.
It's like, oh my God, our escape route is gone. And then the silent helicopter suddenly appears from the other side of the building, kind of like.
It was a Bishop moment. Everyone thought Bishop had screwed over Ripley, but he just was repositioning or whatever. And that's funny because there was another moment in this movie that was a Die Hard moment.
Yes, I know exactly what you're going to say.
They broke into the vault.
Slow motion classical music.
Yep. I just went, oh, come on, Zach. Really? I mean, if he came out and said, I love Die Hard, so I put that as a tribute, I'd probably respect it more. But at the moment.
But I think the important thing here is, you know, what I did read about Zack Snyder doing this is he just wanted to have fun. And, you know, so I don't think he really, you know, it's like, I want to do a nod to this. I want to do a nod to that. Why not? I'm just here to have fun on this film. I'm going to do some weird visual stuff. And I don't criticize this movie for, you know, borrowing from everything, because it's supposed to feel like it's borrowed from everything.
It's fun.
Every single member of the team uses different weapons. And I just love that. I love
yeah.
Somebody sat down and was like, all right, every one of these characters, let's go. Yeah. And it's like, okay, so this guy is going to be using this rifle, and this one's going to be using this completely different rifle. Mm-hmm. We're going to put a gun in Tig Notaro's hands. Like, you know, so after we've already done all that, and so, like, what haven't we used? Oh, well, we'll put an MP7 in her. Like, it's just like every gun, and they're so interesting to look at. My favorite is
they gave what's his name the saw. It's like, hey, you want a crazy awesome. Freaking metal or a saw that's used to cut like cement or whatever.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Yeah.
It's love absolutely that. Useless. It's terrible as a weapon against a zombie horde, but man, does it photograph well.
Yeah.
It looks amazing when he's using that thing.
And I just love the idea that he buried it out in the desert when he was done with the first mission and had to come back and unearth it and look all muscly doing it. It was great. That stuff's so stupid and fun. I mean, the game. See, I just did it. The movie's a game. It's a video game. It's a big, loud, stupid arcade game. Yeah.
Matter of fact, it felt more like a video game whenever they were having their discussion outside the vault and they found the dead bodies, and, you know, some of the dead bodies were wearing, you know, they blew themselves up. They were wearing the same things that the current characters were wearing. I was like, oh, so this is like a video game where you keep running through trying to accomplish the task, which
that's funny. I hadn't thought of it in that term. In my head, I was just like, well, this coincidence is a fun topic for them to say, what if this is us in an alternate timeline? Like, to mess around with it. But I didn't even think about how that's a very, you're basically corpse running. You're back in there and you're like, oh, there's my body from last time I died.
Right.
That's
great. And I kind of liked it. I liked it a lot, actually.
Yeah.
Maybe too much.
I loved the whole sequence because there's a lot of gags in this movie, and the gags are very well executed. But the gag of having to get on the elevator and go get another zombie to try to get it to shamble down the hallway of death. Oh my God.
Oh yes, right on the pulling one off of the the hand truck, the dolly.
Yeah. I was hoping it was the same hand. I was hoping they chopped that hand off the zombie and then heated it up. I couldn't tell if that zombie that he was making eat was his own hand. I would have appreciated
that. Oh, that would have been funny. It was like the hand. Yeah.
All they had to do was put a brick on that hand cart and push it out in front of them. Right?
Right.
Like that. They didn't need to go to all this effort. Well, but of course, you know, it's funny. It's funny.
Yeah.
Really funny.
I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous anyway, because, I mean, why would you have Indiana Jones pressure plates? They're obvious and easy to see leading down to a vault. I mean, that it made absolutely zero sense.
Yeah, like, none of that made sense. World. Yeah, there's no way that this vault in the Olympus, the fake casino, had all that shit there.
You know, it's Get Smart, basically. It's
basically is what it is. It's ridiculous.
But it was
I'm like,
great.
Okay,
but when they sent that final one down there and the two walls smushed it into oblivion, amazing.
That was great.
Amazing.
Which leads to my question, Scott. Is this the bloodiest movie we've ever seen?
Oh, I think so. I think I'm trying to think any, well, okay, at this level of attempted realism, yes. In terms of, like, you know, just the fidelity of it, but I'm sure we've seen something from the 80s where it was
like the Jason versus Freddy or Jason X or one of the Friday the 13th.
Right.
Probably compares,
maybe,
but in a different way. It's less slapstick gore,
right?
Yeah, this is very slapstick.
We weren't cringing when most of these deaths happened, right? We were just kind of like, whatever, just keep on moving.
No, it's no big deal. Although the person getting shot on the hood of the car in the opening credits, good Lord, they're just jerking all over the place,
inch by inch.
Yeah, that was something, man.
And again, some of these zombies are filled with explosive blood. It's so outside of your usual zombie experience, right? Because they're decaying undead, so they don't even have blood. And that's always been one of the cheats to making a zombie movie. You can just bonk them in the head, and you don't have to show a bunch of fluids. But not Zack Snyder.
right.
Like, if you look at this one, the GIF I just put in there, which is during the credits itself. There's no single body has this much anything in it.
Yeah. I love it. That is so, yeah.
But it was Rodriguez, like, sometimes this is what I want. It's what I like about a good violent anime. Like, it's not, I don't have to take any of it seriously. None of it has, you know, a hold on me emotionally. It's just like, oh my gosh, look at all that. Like, they just go nuts with it. And the movie just was reveling in that when it killed the zombie at the end in the helicopter. And yeah. Batista shot the slow motion bullet through its face and it split open
that
like that.
Such a cool shot.
Just cool, yeah. Man. Like, that stuff is what I signed up for. I mean, I'll admit, as a genre, when a zombie a property takes itself more seriously, I like it more. Generally speaking, I do like, you know, a story that deals with human, basically The Walking Dead without drawing it out for 50 years. A shorter version of that is kind of my jam, because then this stuff means something. If somebody gets their head blown off, it's not just for laughs or just for action. It's also emotionally horrifying and, you know, all this other stuff. I kind of prefer that. I like that, the story writing of a apocalyptic tale. But for what this is trying to do, I had no problem parking my brain at the door and just saying, all right, Zack Snyder, let's see what you got, buddy.
Because so often the movie's trying to make you laugh, and that's the way to go. It's the reason why the greatest zombie movie ever made is Shaun of the Dead. I will not be gainsaid on this. It will always be the greatest, because it tries so well to make you laugh. It does a good job of doing that, right? And so my example in this movie, which I want to spend time with, is the escape to the elevator on the casino floor, where you have your basically your three remaining principals, and Raul Castillo is he gets bit. Mm-hmm. And it's so tense. It's so exciting. There are so many rounds fired by Dave Bautista and so many zombie heads exploded. And still, Raul Castillo goes down. He's going to get covered with zombies. You see him pulling a grenade and arming it. Yeah. And that means run. Mm-hmm. And they run. They get into the elevator. He explodes right behind them. The elevator doors close. And Muzak starts playing.
Yes.
It is so funny. I want to remake that little moment with every song.
Yeah, that's
ever
and it's
been
not
recorded.
Even Muzak. It's Do You Want to Hurt Me by Culture Club, not even done in a Muzak style. Like,
right.
Yeah, it was just,
I wrote in my notes, that was the funniest song you could come up with.
So my question for you is, what song would you have had? My first thought was Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass.
Spanish Flea. I think the one that came to mind, I had two that came to mind. Sailing by Christopher Cross, I think would have been funny. Mm-hmm. But the winner for me would have been Escape, the Pina Colada song by Rupert Holmes.
Give us anything. Hum me a bar. I can't think of it.
If you like pina coladas.
Oh, yes. I would. That's all a right. Classic.
I'm in.
On in the rain.
I like that you went all in on that opening line there just now.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It wasn't just.
I'm not going to go like, I'm not going to go soft on that. Come on.
You were full throated on that. That was amazing. Yeah. That was right after. So that was right before, I guess, the scene where Anna D. Lugurigunanena, whatever her name is. Got her head turned around backwards. Holy shit.
Yeah. That was unexpected.
That was pretty impressive.
That caught me off guard.
Didn't see that coming. I mean, plenty of scenes in this movie and in other zombie movies where they pull somebody back toward the horde and they finally realize it's no good. I'm going to die here. So go run. And they pull him back and blood starts coming out of stuff and everything, like the girl in the hall. But then this happened and I thought, this will be one of those. They'll just pull her back until Dave Bautista can't see her anymore. Nope. Going to turn her head all the way around. Going to look right at him. Her spine's going to pop out of her shoulder. Yep. And she'll be thrown to the ground. That was intense.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, it's the goriest movie we've ever seen.
It is, dude.
And kind of comes close.
I think it is. I really think it is. Like, again, it's played for more laughs and more of an arcade kind of splashy fun than it is, you know, to horrify you. But if you're just looking at the numbers, it's the goriest thing we've seen. I really think it is.
Yeah.
When he gets, dude, Dillahunt, when he dies, that cat, by the way, the cat is the freaking bomb. I love that thing.
It is. And you know what? We have freaking that bitch Carol Baskin to thank for that, because they, you know, the VFX guys were like, well, where can we go see some big cats? And the only place we would let them in is Carol Baskin's sanctuary in Tampa, Florida.
Is that true?
They can watch how they move and create a CGI cat that looked realistic.
Well, it looks insanely cool. and it's all zombified. It's a white, you know, they even mention it was one of Siegfried and Roy's that got loose and whatever.
Right.
And then when he's thrashing him around, scratching away, you know, Dillahunt's face is turning into ribbons and then finally just chomps down on that head. That is some of the most visceral effects laden horror work I've seen in a long time. That was great.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And that felt good.
Actual chick in the bucket, the best chick in the bucket in the movie, in my opinion. I don't think you've mentioned it yet. Mm. And it's the giraffe. Like, we see it at the beginning.
Oh, I didn't see a giraffe.
Yeah, there's a zombie giraffe.
What?
And
how did I miss that? I
see the zombie giraffe.
Yeah, spent the whole movie waiting to see it again.
It adds credence to the fact that somebody brought this up in the trivia segment of IMDb. But if the zombie virus can move from people to animals,
right,
then they've got a bigger problem on their hands than just zombies running around, because rats or something could go right through those little those little holes in the containers that they've walled the city with, and you have zombie rats running around now.
I just don't see it. Where is it? Crap! I'm trying to find a photo. Yeah, I'm trying to find a photo here.
I'll get it.
If you can find one, I'm bummed I didn't see that, because I love stupid shit like that. Like, I just, and especially this. Like, I'm guessing there are. I saw a Wayne Industries van at some point.
Right.
Oh, really? Yeah. All right. So there's nods to the Justice League.
Yeah, a little
bit.
Have
you guys? Okay, so if you like that, have you guys seen Zombies?
No.
No.
I believe it's on Netflix as well. We watched it last year sometime, I believe.
Zombies.
It came out in 2016, and it's basically what would happen if a zombie outbreak happened in a zoo.
What? And,
2016.
Sign me up, dude. This looks great.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, Zombies. It's Jurassic World of the Dead, it says in their tagline. That sounds 3.3 out of 10.
Yeah, it's a fun watch, though. It is not good. Yeah. It is not good, but it's a fun watch. Me and the kids had a lot of fun watching it.
Are you saying this is a Netflix original? This is an actual Netflix?
No. Oh, this is a
Asylum movie.
Yeah, it's a Asylum movie, I believe. It might be.
All right.
Is it an Asylum movie? I can't remember. Yeah. But it's on like Tubi, Peacock, Vudu, free with ads and stuff.
Directed by Steve Miller.
Oh, it's on Amazon Prime right now. Yeah. Is
it? Yeah, when I watched it, when I saw it on Amazon Prime a couple of years ago.
Yeah, is it bad? I mean, bad enough for, it seems like something we should watch.
No. This is not a movie that I would ever want anybody to watch. It's really bad.
Oh, I didn't know that was the bar for Film Sack. Yeah. I thought it was just,
we don't watch movies that we don't want anybody to watch.
Yeah, it seems like maybe we got this backwards. I mean, the screenshots make it just look like there's a bunch of animals that are stalking humans. Is that what it is? I guess that's
pretty much.
All right. Well, good.
Yep, zombie rhino. Gonna gore you.
Zombie rhino. No way. Why does that crack me up? I feel like I need to see this. All right.
You need to at least, you need to check it out. Right. I think you should at least watch it.
I mean, it does feel like, if you're saying we never it's do it trash. Here, then I'll watch it. But if we're doing it here, I'll wait.
Right.
Because, you know, and there's a Zombies 2, by the way.
Yeah, there is. I wouldn't watch that.
It's like Sharknado. There's going to be 5 or 6 of these things.
Well, the Zombies 2 has a 0.2 rating better, 3.5 out of 10. Okay. So,
well, they figured it out.
Yeah. No one in the cast is the same. All different faces. All these people look like they got pooped out the back end of the porn industry. All right. Moving on. Randy, any luck on finding me my zombified giraffe from the film?
I'm actually questioning myself. Did I invent this because it's in Zombies? I'm actually. Because at the first time we see the tiger, it's an escape.
Yeah.
We're seeing it get out of its enclosure or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I really genuinely thought I saw a giraffe in there. And then I'm spending the rest of the movie like, I'm going to be a giraffe later.
But oh, hey, I got a quiz. Let me give you guys a quiz. This is fun. This is like a TMS quiz. Okay.
All right.
True or false? Dave Bautista and Hiroyuki Sanada starred together in an MCU film. True or false?
True. Well, he was obviously Drax, Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah. Did they? Because Hiroyuki was.
You guys will learn something from Brian as he does this. His process is why he's good at trivia, by the way.
Yeah.
For real. It's admirable because I can know where your brain goes. You're like, all right, so we know this factor. Boink. All right, now you got this thing laid out. I'm
trying to remember who Hiroyuki was in the Marvel Universe. Was he in Doctor Strange? No. I'm sure Haruki's been in the Marvel universe. I just can't remember.
All right, so you say false. Dunaway says true. What do you say, Randy? Without looking it up,
I'm going to guess that Hiroyuki Sanada was played some bit character in the last one, in the final Avengers movie, because I know he wasn't in Doctor Strange. I'm sure of that. But there were so many people in Avengers Endgame that played these little.
You'd
bit
be correct, roles. And it's a little bit of a trick because it's not a Guardians film, so it is Endgame. Right. And Haruki Sanada is the one killed by Ronan in that scene in Tokyo.
Oh, okay. And the guy that Hawkeye Ronan goes after.
Clint killed him, yeah.
Interesting. Oh, yeah. I didn't realize. I forgot he was Dogen in the last couple seasons or the last season of Lost when they finally find this temple that they never saw on that island that they spent 4 years walking around and never found the temple that could revive people from the dead.
Yeah.
By the way, you know why I'm so affirmatively making that that belief that everybody was in Avengers Endgame? Mm. I'm currently on a Community kick. I'm rewatching it for the first time. It's the second time I've ever watched through all of Community, and a bunch of them are in Avengers Endgame.
Mm. Oh yeah, like, yeah.
Like it's just like this thing that I just recently looked up that they
because of the Russo brothers were involved with Community. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. They directed all their stuff, especially the episodes where they got crazy, like paintball and all that. That was all Russo brothers stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's so funny you said that, Randy, because my brain just farted. Look at this. So Sanada played Scorpion in the new Mortal Kombat live action film. You're rewatching Community. Russo brothers involved there, helped direct Sanada in a film. What's his name from Community? Main guy, can't think of his name. The soup.
Oh, Jeff Winger.
Jeff Winger character. Is the actor's name? Can't think of his name.
Yeah, he's
shit.
Oh my god. Soup with so and so.
So and so guy. Anyway, that guy is Johnny Cage. In the Mortal Kombat animated movie that's about the origin of Scorpion. I'm saying is everything's all connected, man. It's crazy. And by the way, literally funny as Johnny Cage. I'm not quite done with this movie yet. It's the best.
You have to be. I mean, Joel McHale.
He's great.
You don't put him into a role unless you're going to let him cut loose.
Like Ryan Reynolds.
The voice of Garage Hellscream is Scorpion in this thing. But I'll say it now. It was going to be my recommendal Wednesday. It still will be. But the Mortal Kombat Scorpion Origin anime thing that came out in 2020, super gory, very cool, easily the best Mortal Kombat property outside the games. Easily.
Oh, wow.
It's awesome. So cool. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. It's not about these zombies or any of that. we got to give some credit to Athena. Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, what were you about to say?
I was going
to
say, we got to give some credit to Athena Parample. She is the awesome queen zombie. She's not even credited in the movie.
Yeah.
Really?
She's normally a stunt actor, and she does tons of stunt work for all sorts of stuff you've seen before. But she is, I think, a high point of this movie. She embodies that weirdness, and it's the coolest zombie in the movie, and it's a bummer she's basically killed halfway through. Because
There's a moment in my rewatch where I noticed that she teabags as much as she can teabag, being a woman, teabags the tied up jerk dude, quarantine policeman dude.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty good.
She's very bendy, and that's like one of those things we talk about. You got to add something to your zombies. You got to do something people haven't done before with zombies.
Right.
So let's make them yoga zombies. I like wrote it down three times. Oh, yoga zombies. Yeah. And boy, she almost like it almost defeats it. Like it almost, I'm like, oh, almost not a zombie. Almost more a, you know, this movie has like a bunch of parkour zombies in it, which has been done before. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But almost kind of takes me out of them being zombies when she's like in a 3-point stance with multiple parts of her body touching the ground that shouldn't be able to do that.
Look at that.
She'd be great at Twister.
She'd be really good at Twister. I just put a picture of her as herself in her thing. She's beautiful. Like the least zombie person I've looked at all week. She's gorgeous, and but she really sold it to me.
Where'd you put it? Because it's not in our film sack chat, is it?
I put it in Discord. I sent it to Dunaway. Sorry.
I definitely saw it. You must have just sent it to me.
You sent it directly to Brian.
Sorry.
Hey, look at this. Hey,
I do this sometimes.
Look at that. Look at that there. Look at there. Yes, sir. Oh,
yeah, she's lovely. Wow. Look at her. She looks like she'd kick your ass, too. But
she does, yeah. But she probably could.
Here's the thing, though. Like, I wrote this down later. There's a lot of Cirque du Soleil moves or like modern dance moves. Not from her as much, but mostly some of the side zombies. And that takes me out a little bit. Like, I felt like they drew it was like a performance of Cats or something.
Well, why, you know, I agree. I even wrote that down. Cirque du Soleil, alpha zombies are goofy. Mm-hmm. My exact words in my notes here. That's awesome. But why not, if you're going to have them do that, just build it into the opening credits that you see a bunch of acrobats and Cirque du Soleil people getting bitten by zombies and turning into zombies themselves. Then it all makes sense.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And you would think that those could be alphas, right? Like dancers ripped, to, you know, the prime of their lives, 0% body fat. Like they would be great alphas. So play that up. That's a great way to fix that. Cause it just annoyed me every time they'd move. It was like, yeah. Ooh. Like it was like watching people on the street in West Side Story, getting their knives out going, you know, I can't buy that with mindless zombies. You can't do that. All right. I wrote down here. We need to make a pick here. Okay. Oh, I almost forgot. I got to at least mention Junkie XL. Amazing soundtrack. Once again, well done. Mad Max Fury Road sound music guy. Yeah.
Junkie XL. That was.
He's basically a permanent Zack Snyder worker now. He's like, what's his name with Nolan? I can't think of
Zimmer.
Zimmer, yeah. Hans Zimmer and Christopher Nolan are inseparable. Mm-hmm. Steven Spielberg and John Williams can't be parted. It's like this with them, I think. It's the Zack Snyder, Junkie XL, Tom Hulkenberg party. So yes, he did a great job.
Dutch. He is Dutchman.
He is Dutch. And he did an amazing, as much as, I mean, I still think his best soundtrack is Fury Road, but this is close to that in terms of the kind of soundtrack it is. And it's where I think he shines. So more of that, please. I'm not really a fan of what he did with Justice League, but he made a really great soundtrack for that Sonic movie, and that seems impossible, but he did.
And he did a good job on Deadpool. If you like the music in Deadpool, you're listening to Junkie XL.
Yeah, he's awesome. Love that guy. All right. Anyway, what I was going to say was I had a note here. Best Dave Bautista role, and it can't be wrestling. And I have an easy answer for this, and this movie reminded me of it a couple of times. We'll get to it in a second, but I'll let everyone else answer first. So, Randy, why don't you tell us, if you had to pick just one, where do you go? He doesn't have a ton, right? Like it's, you know, it's a really.
Yeah, he doesn't have a lot. I did really like his turn in Blade Runner 2049. Yeah.
That's my pick.
Movie keeps coming up. By me, I keep mentioning it.
That movie's
and
awesome.
I haven't seen it recently either, but it definitely stuck the landing. That movie has stuck with me.
No, that movie's awesome. It's my second favorite movie of all time. Yeah, that's the one. And the reason I would have picked that one is because the glasses he wears in this reminded me of that.
Yeah, the little tiny glasses on his big head.
Right. And
he doesn't really have a big head, but with those glasses, it looks like it's a really big head.
And he may one up us all when Dune gets here finally. And that may be, you know, where we love him the most. I don't know. Let's see. In Dune, he's Rabin, I think. Glossu Rabin is the character. Just a big beast of a man. But look at what he's got coming. He's got Dune. Army of the Dead, Las Vegas. So he does voices in that. Dune, Groove Tales, Knives Out 2. I didn't know he was in that.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, Universal's Most Wanted, whatever that is.
Which will be his last Guardians, he says.
Oh, he's no more Drax after that?
No more Drax.
Do you think they kill him off?
God, I hope not.
Yeah, I hope not, too.
I'm still legit sad that they invented a character for Dave Bautista in the James Bond movies. He appears in Spectre. He was intended to be mute, and that's okay for an actor of his range. But then they just didn't use him much at all. Like that makes me sad. He could have been a very formidable villain for James Bond.
Yeah, I agree. He's got such a cool vibe. I think
we've yet to see his best work.
Oh yeah, he's got more to do.
Yeah, right,
for sure.
Mm-hmm. He's a rom com.
Dave Bautista has been taking acting lessons like nobody's business. It's a remarkable how far he's come in this movie. When he's given the opportunity to just act, to do pure talking, he's really good. He's gotten to, you know, to be so good that I'm like ready to see him with another person in a drama, I think.
Yeah. If the Blade Runner role really put that home for me, and I know it's been a few years now, but that to me was like, wow, you're going to do more than just Drax the Destroyer. Here's the other thing, though. This is what I want more than anything in this world. It's not going to happen, but this is what I want. Dave Bautista, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, John Cena, heist movie. Make it happen. What are you doing?
There you go.
The three biggest, most important wrestler actor dudes ever. Get them all together.
How much of a hit do you think Cena took this past week?
Oh, why? What happened? What happened with Cena?
I have no opinion of this because I don't have a full understanding of the politics in the social structures thereof. But he said about the new Fast and the Furious 9 movie, he said that what was it, talked about Taiwan being a country or something.
Yeah, he just said Taiwan is a country, and then he made this like prisoner's apology for that, which is just, it's just ridiculous. Taiwan is a country. Hey, world. Taiwan is a country. Yeah. Come at me. Like, seriously.
This is how I feel about it. All I know is there's been an argument going on between China and Taiwan for decades, well before I was born, about the legitimacies of their country. And there's all kinds of cultural things going on over there. I don't feel like I have, you know, I don't have enough knowledge to say anything. Uh-huh. I don't have enough knowledge about any of that.
Yeah, neither does John Cena.
As an American, I'm always like, you think yourself a country, you be a country. But then again, I also remember how the South wanted to be its own country. And I go, okay, there's levels here. And maybe unless I know the full story, I'm not going to get involved with this.
No, I didn't even know about it.
This is that big High Line story where there are rich people who are famous and they have to bow to China on a regular basis because
right. If
they offend China, they lose a big chunk of their audience. They lose a lot of their,
and not only
to make money.
Yeah,
not only that. I mean, okay. So let's just say, okay, like I said, I don't want anybody to get mad at me, but it's fine. If you get mad at me, that's fine. We can have discussions. But all I can say is this, if I was in Cena's position and I made a faux pas, for whatever reason, whether or not I do believe Taiwan's a country, I don't think he really had a real big opinion. I think he just threw something off the cuff. That's just an opinion. But then if everybody said, oh, well, our whole production and everybody on this film, that's a franchise that's been going on for, you know, forever, and years. John Cena made a mistake and is about to sink that whole thing in China and being a Johnny come lately to the series, that's a lot of pressure. You're like, okay, I guess I better apologize because it's not just about him.
I think those guys should just act and not say shit. That's what I think. If I was an actor, right, I would stay out of all of it.
Exactly. Right. Somebody should have said before he went over there and was interviewed about this, they should have said, hey man, there's some stuff going on over here. You might want to watch. Yeah. You know what I mean?
John Cena.
Right.
All right. Let's do clips. Before we get to them though, Utah connection in this movie, and it bugged me. I just want to share this real quick. At the end, dude with the saw is going, he's leaving Las Vegas, like the movie says, and he's heading, one would assume, north because he hits a sign that says Utah, join the high life or whatever our stupid slogan is.
Life elevated.
Life elevated, that's it. And he starts heading down that road. That is not.
Why do I know that you don't? Hold on. What?
I hate sayings like that. They're so stupid. But anyway, he does this in an area where A, that is not what's there. It looks nothing like that there. And no, B,
you drive through a scary canyon to go to Utah.
And you still have to go through Arizona to do it. There's a lot there that they completely hand waved to the side. Geographically speaking, the movie takes some liberties. That's all I wanted to say.
Big liberties, yeah.
And I don't understand why you would drive presumably to St. George to rent a plane.
You would have to. You'd have to go to the same
driving south the whole time.
Right. But you would have to take that municipal airport in St. George. That's the close. He's no way he drove to Salt Lake City. He didn't drive 6 hours with a zombie bite. Like, he probably didn't even drive the hour out of Vegas. That's the other thing. It's an hour and a half to St. George.
Do we want consistency on how long it takes from a bite to a turn? Do we want that?
We do, but the thing is, they showed that it was just it wasn't actually to the blood, right? It was like it was like on the outside.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it wasn't.
Your explanation is that Vanderho has really thick skin, like ridiculously thick elephant skin, and so it takes longer.
What I want is Vanderho for the sequel, so I don't want him to die. I actually really like that dude. I think if you're going to have somebody carry it on, you put a bullet through Batista's head, and this is your guy. He's your new guy. Keep him going. Yeah, don't kill him.
New guy.
Yeah.
I was kind of surprised that they killed Dave Batista.
Yeah, that took me. That was like, whoa.
I was genuinely shocked.
Maybe that was his way of saying, I don't want to be in sequels.
I think that's what he did. I think he actually said that. I think he probably pushed for it.
If he doesn't want to be Drax anymore, that tells me the guy's sick of sequels.
Probably.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to these clips. We have a few clips, and I'm going to play them. Not a ton, because the movie's not like, I don't know. It's not the most clippy movie, but there's stuff in here. Like this guy counting.
A one, two, three, four.
That's, I don't know why I put it.
The Liberace.
The Liberace impersonator guy.
At the beginning.
Right. Yeah. All right. That was right before the music started, and then the naked lady boobies came out.
Yes, boy, they sure focused on those for a long time. I don't know how you get.
But it was fair play, because then they focused on that dude's leopard undies.
That's right.
They really did.
Yeah.
So it was like, you know, you get these four women dressed as showgirls into the Rain Man suite, and
By the way, the first movie he ever shot in digital, it looked fine, but he's only done film everywhere else. I always find that interesting when a filmmaker finally goes, "All right, fine. I'll go with the times." Tarantino just still sticking it out. He's like, "Nope, I'm not doing it. Show me your feet. I'm not doing it. Show me your feet."
They're gross.
Yeah.
tied into that that opening music sequence. One of the things I really did love about it was the tie-in from the music to the gunshots and the explosions. Like the way that they set up the timing of all of the drum beats during the song to be tied to gunshots. Like, especially when the guy is floating down in the parachute right next
being
to
lowered
New York.
Down. Not that lowered. Is not how parachutes work. He is being lowered. Yeah. It's the weirdest thing. Like, why is the military got a guy on a crane and they're lowering him slowly?
Yeah, that was pretty. You know what? Here's what should happen. Zack Snyder's next big project should be Zack Snyder's in charge of credits. And the other guy's in charge of the rest of the film. Do that.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, here. Oh, he's such a badass, I wrote.
With 96 hours left, the government has already moved more than half of its military presence out of the quarantine zone.
He's just so cool, dude. Gosh dang it, he's cool. Mm-hmm. Freaking love that guy. All right, I'm annoyed by this. They got Sean Spicer to do a freaking cameo in this movie, and I hated it.
Oh, come on, Sean. You know they're not infected. If they were, they would be zombies already. They're political prisoners, just people the government doesn't want on the street.
Now, I didn't have his voice because I hate him, and I don't want to give him any airtime, and I freaking hate Sean Spicer, so F that guy.
There's a really fun page on TV Tropes called Trumplica. And this movie hammers Trumplica right down for you.
Yeah.
Apparently in a city where you haven't had power for months or years or who knows how long, you can just turn on some power to a building and instantly get CNN on a TV. Right.
Yeah. And the music.
Did you know that Muzak in casinos is played from a record? I didn't know.
Apparently
The needle is still ready to go right in the middle of a song.
Yeah.
Anyway,
that's wild.
It would be in my casino.
Yeah.
This example of the Trumplica trope has a completely thoughtless president of the United States, like a president who is an abject moron, just jumping around trying to figure out when he wants Las Vegas to be nuked around July 4th.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. I love that idea that they were trying to make it around the holiday. But then I didn't love it because I thought that doesn't sound that far from the truth. So anyway,
right, exactly.
Seems like something he'd want to do. All right, I got some weird audio. This is crazy. This came in a brown envelope and it's a tape. I couldn't believe this. It just shows up at the house, and on the thing, nobody's even taking credit for it. It just says Brian Ibbett prom date in the limo. That's all it says.
Wow, okay. This is a cassette, Scott.
It's a cassette tape. I had to transfer it, make it digital so we could use it today. Oof, it was a pain in my ass.
Nice.
I had to buy this thing on Amazon. It was a giant nightmare. So here it is, that weird audio.
Your turn, if you want. I could use my rectal thermometer.
Whoa, what? Rectal thermometer, what? Brian, gross.
Yeah, Yeah.
Gross.
Well, listen, you know, there was a flu outbreak going on back then around prom time, and I didn't want to take any chances.
I understand. Yeah, and it's always you get a more accurate reading from the bum. I get it.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Nothing. Yeah. Nothing wrong with that at all.
Well, speaking of bums,
everything is wrong with that.
I'm just saying, if this was an episode of TMS, I'm putting in "you get a more accurate reading from the bum" as a show title.
Yeah,
it's true though. Speaking of bums, when you ask Tig Notaro what a bum vacuum does, this is what Tig Notaro will tell you.
Sucks ass.
Sucks ass.
God, every line she delivered, so funny.
Sucks
every
ass.
Every single line.
I love her.
And
she's one
of
the best things about Star Trek Discovery, by the way.
Yeah, I agree.
We'll talk about that.
Okay. All right. Oh, okay. Sure. Right. Yeah, of course.
Oh, wait. Is there, what? Huh? Did something change? Something happened?
We'll just keep going.
Okay. I haven't heard.
Okay.
All right. Dieter thing.
Watch your fingers, Mr. Big Hand.
Mr. Big Hand?
Mr. Big Hand. How did we feel about Dieter instantly falling in love with, what's his name?
Vanderhoof. I liked that relationship. I liked it. I thought that was fun. Yeah. I thought it started out so adversarial. I mean, it's tropey as hell, but as it went on, you know, and you knew it was going to go down to something like that. They were going to have to do something major for the other guy or whatever. I love that. I thought that was great.
Yeah.
Those two had chemistry.
Me too.
All right. Here's the thing you don't say anymore.
Easy peasy Japanesey.
All right. Unless you're Japanese, you can say it, but you're not supposed to. And then you say this.
Easy peasy lemon squeezy.
So I didn't realize that lemon squeezy, people used to say Japanesey. I didn't know that.
Yeah. I didn't either. I always thought it was lemon squeezy. Yeah. I didn't.
So that's good. That means
once
our generation,
again, my ignorance.
We've skipped past it. We don't need to worry about it
anymore. Yes, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. Very nice. All right. Here's Dieter screaming. Oh, no, it's not. Something else. Hold on. That was the queen getting her.
Part of that sounded like somebody blowing bubbles like in.
Putting their face in a bobbing for apples tank.
Yeah, that early bit is gross. Where she's just ready to go.
It's yes. Like you're in the tub going.
It's really, I thought that stuff was really cool. Really well done sound stuff. All right. Here's Dieter screaming. All right. There's that.
He needs a little Dieter screaming for you.
And then finally, the Paul Reiser moment.
Power to control your own zombie army. That's the ultimate WMD.
There you go. I had to get Garrett Dillahunt in here. That's it.
We got it. Now it's time for this.
Why, it's the Film Sack checklist. Never trust Garrett Dillahunt ever. Check. Drax only wants to cook more hamburgers. Check. And finally, the one truth of this film is that Dieter might scream at any moment in the film. Check. He was into it. All right, connections. Oh, that's why you were saying be quiet.
Yeah, so there's actually two people.
Really a surprise, is it?
There's two people I want to call out here. The first one is Sala Baker. And I don't think you've heard of this guy. Sala Baker is a stuntman. He's been in a lot of things. And his IMDb credit list is incredible. Mm. I hope that you go look at it to understand what I'm talking about. This guy was in the Lord of the Rings movies. He was in the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. He did stunts in the A-Team and Star Trek Into Darkness and Iron Man 3 and Deadpool. And Jesus, every major action movie that's been made the last 20 years, it's got Sala Baker.
Wow.
When you see him, you're going to go, oh, I wonder if he was also a stand-in for Dave Bautista for some stunts. Mm. Because he just kind of looks like Dave Bautista. Mm. He's from Wellington. So anyway, that's just that was an interesting little Star Trek connection for me.
But, sure,
you could use him for any movie basically that has a Star Trek connection because he was in a Star Trek movie and he's been in everything.
Yeah.
But let's talk about Tig Notaro. So she's Commander Jet Reno on Star Trek Discovery.
Fantastic on there.
Yes, just like. What were we doing in the long years before Tig Notaro came along? Seriously. Yeah. She's so amazing.
Yeah.
Yep. And what's amazing about her is her story of her C. diff diagnosis, her cancer diagnosis, all the stuff she went through. I mean, she, by all accounts, statistically should be dead. And instead, she's like having this heyday of a career right now. And it's awesome. I think it's great. She's rad. And I hope she just keeps having great success. That's one Mississippi show she's on. Fan-freaking-tastic. If you haven't seen that, watch it.
I don't know that one.
It's very good. She co-wrote it. It's about her. Well, it's loosely based on what her life was like in Mississippi when she grew up. And it's very good. You should watch it. Well, excellent work there on those. The soundtrack, great. I give it an OOTBP for one of the best parts. I think it's very good. And also, I really like all the covers. I know people don't like slowed down versions of things or whatever, but I think that stuff's great. I dug it.
Oh, totally. Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah. There was a version of...
I thought it was cool.
A version of something that's normally really fast. What was it? And she was saying it super slow.
Yeah, there was another Alison Krauss one. It was...
what was that?
Pull it up here.
I really liked it. And it threw me because I was like, that is so a different take on that song.
Bad Moon Rising. Oh, sorry, Tay Gilmore's Bad Moon Rising.
Yeah, that was so good. Real good. All right. Alternate title time, everyone. Just handed to me, fresh from the back of the room, Drax Machina. Or Oceans of Blood 12. Fantastic. All right, moving on. Emails. We got a million of these emails.
Are we going to do our Twitter posts?
Oh, shit. Did I skip those?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm the worst. No, let's go back to those Twitter posts, everybody.
Because mine is a lot like your alternate title, damn it.
Oh, whoops. Shoot. Well, the order's bad. Okay, let's go back to that. The Twitter post. You guys sum it up in 100 or 280 characters or less. It's like I've never done this before. Let's start with Randy.
Army of the Dead. Zombies are having sex and reproducing by the pool, and they're so loud. Just like a Saturday night at Ibbotown. Oh.
Kind of felt like we knew that was coming. Brian Dunaway.
Army of the Dead. A feel-good movie about a 4th of July weekend family outing in Vegas where a father and his estranged daughter are able to reconnect during a zombie outbreak. Oh, and there's a one-eyed zombie tiger named Valentine. It's mostly the latter. Hashtag family.
Nice. That's very sweet. Also, Brian Ibbett.
Army of the Dead. Ocean's 11 degree body temperature.
Oh, see? You was close.
It's not the meat, it's the heat.
I didn't mean to usurp you.
The heat.
Mm-hmm. All right, we got a million billion of these emails from everybody all over the place, Twitter DMs, everybody and their dog sent in similar messages to the one I'm about to read you, okay? So we'll read this one. This is from our Aussie friend, Braden from Western Australia. G'day, Scott, Brian, and Brian.
G'day.
I don't know why I said three Brians. Oh, there's...
there's no Randy.
Yeah, Randy, you're in there somehow. In reference to your most recent sacking of the Predator, actually, it's just Predator, right? No.
Right. No.
The Predator? The Predator.
Now you're getting confused. Right. No, the new one is The Predator. Right. We watched Predator.
Wait. Yes. No, the old one is The Predator.
No.
No?
No.
The old one is just plain Predator.
It's just Predator then. I had always thought The Predator... He said, I always thought that the Predator laugh at the end of the film was playback of Billy's laugh from the second vajayjay joke.
Yeah.
Right.
As the Predator torments Mr. Weathers with the voice of Mac right before his arm comes off. So he too tries to torment and confuse Dutch with Billy's laugh as he arms his wrist nuke. Thoughts?
True. Okay. Yeah, thank you for that, and we can move on with our lives.
Yeah, because that's all. I don't know if we've ever had so much feedback about a thing that we were all wrong on.
Yeah,
none of us.
And it's amazing because I feel like it's true.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew that, and I didn't bring it up during the show. But
you knew that. Yeah. See, I didn't know that
because he uses that voice. He uses that voice thing all the time. But it was still so over the top and stupid that I didn't.
Like, yeah. That was our point. Like when I said it sounds like Jack Palance. It did sound like Jack Palance. Like they didn't get right what they were going for. Was the point?
Well, clearly not, because of all the times I've seen it, I always just thought he's laughing, and so it never worked. I never understood it. Laughing. And then Ibbett understood it, he still thought it was dumb.
I still thought it was dumb. Yeah.
We're still. You know what? We're going to say poorly executed, regardless. That's what we'll say.
Yes, exactly. Regardless. Yeah. Yes.
All right.
I hate to be that guy saying, oh, I knew it. I totally knew that, but I did know that.
It's all right. We just endured machine gun style email all week. It's fine.
Right.
It's not a problem.
You're morons. You're all idiots.
Our next film next week will be, I'm so excited about this, Reign of Fire. Now, if I'm not incorrect, it's 2003.
Reign of Fire.
I'm trying to remember if I'm right about the date. Hold on. Reign of Fire.
1998.
2002. I was off by a year. I thought it was 03. Reign of Fire, 2002. You got your Christian Bale. You got your Matthew McConaughey in there.
You got your dragon. You got your McConaughey.
You got your Dr. Bashir from DS9. And Alexander Siddig in there. Ned Dennehy, brother of Brian Dennehy.
Actually, so not Ted Danson?
Alice Krieg, the Borg Queen. So we already got a Star Trek connection.
And here's the thing. When we started FilmSack, we made like the early list. Here's some movies we want to see. That first long list of like 50 movies, Reign of Fire was pretty prominent in there. It just sort of fell away because it's never streaming.
Yeah.
And it just takes me back. Like, this is going to be so different than it would have been in 2011 if we'd sacked it then.
Right.
I don't remember anything about this movie anymore.
I love it. I just know the dragons were cool and... I'm a giant fan. Even though it's the director is super hit and miss, the very next movie after Reign of Fire was that Elektra movie, and that was terrible. Terrible. But he did some great stuff with that.
I disagree with you on that.
I'm going to say, I don't know if it was terrible.
Oh, it's terrible. Right. It's terrible. Right. You guys, Elektra, hold on. Let me make sure I'm on the right planet. Brian Ibbett, stand with me in solidarity.
It's horrible.
It's horrible.
Yeah, it was... it made the bad Daredevil Ben Affleck movie worse. Yeah. Having Elektra come
out. It did not. It made it better.
I actually also liked that one. I was in a time in my life when I liked all these things.
I was okay with the Daredevil one. I really disliked Elektra. That was
really
horrendous.
Most
horrendous.
People agree that the Daredevil was worse.
Because
I've got no taste anyway, because I think the Ben Affleck old Batman is actually pretty good. I like it. I like it.
He annoyed me in Justice League.
People disagree.
Yeah, I think we need an audience straw poll. which was worse, Ben Affleck's Daredevil or Elektra?
Yeah.
What's in your wallet?
Yeah, what's in your wallet?
But I think it's unfair because a lot of people didn't see the Elektra movie because they'd seen the Daredevil
first. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And it's poop. It's just pure poop.
It took people on the floor. It's like, I don't want to see it.
You're not supporting my theory. You're just saying that it was so bad it scared people off. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
I see what you're saying.
Right.
The bottom line is we'll watch it for FilmSack at some point, is what we're saying. We'll
yes.
Yeah. I really don't like polling the audience about these things either because, I think what really put that
to bed. You're going to lose.
No, what really put it to bed for me was the Captain Marvel movie. Mm. Such a great movie. So many assholes out there in the audience being like, I don't like it. We know why you didn't like it.
I didn't see it yet. I really need to see it. I'll finally watch that thing this year, I think. That'll be the year I watch.
Well, you really should, yeah.
I didn't know if people didn't like it. Who didn't like it?
A lot of people, but they're usually
a lot of people who didn't like what's-her-face's comments during press junkets and stuff.
I'm so glad I don't read
Larson's press junkets.
I'm with you, Dunaway. That's one I avoided, and I don't care. They can all go pound sand.
Avoid all that crap.
Yeah, go pound sand. I'm going to watch a movie.
Here's a news flash. Actors are people with opinions, and some of them suck.
Yeah.
But we contradicted what we said earlier about actors should just stick to acting and not.
Right.
That's and what I'm saying.
I think actors can say whatever they want to. They just need someone.
They need to know. Right.
Yeah. No, here's what needs to happen. Here's what needs to happen. They can do whatever the hell they want. It's on me. Does it matter to me or doesn't it? That's it.
Right.
And then collectively to all the viewers, watchers, consumers, does it matter to you? And if it does, walk with your wallet. If it doesn't, then watch your movie and don't care about what they did. Like if you want to
put your wallet on a leash and walk away.
You want to do a Kevin Spacey, like a Kevin Spacey film festival one weekend, go for it. Have at it. Have a ball.
Kevin Spacey's back in a movie. How did this work? I didn't want to know, so I stopped reading the article.
He's playing a guy who's going after a child molester or something.
No, I don't want to know. Brian Dunaway takes ignorance as bliss to the extreme.
It's like, oh God, I don't want to know
Yeah, it's right. Yeah. It's some indie movie where he goes after like sex crime people.
Which, no, really? Oh my God.
Really funny to me. I don't know why that's funny. Well, I know why
it's funny.
It is.
It's ironic.
Yeah, it's
crap.
Ironic. It's the
man who
ironic.
Drew God. And it's, yeah.
The man who drew God?
Yes, the man who drew God.
Okay. That sounds,
look, I'm this not... is how I generally feel about things. When I see super rich people having discussions, I'm like, if I ever sat down at a dinner table with one of these people and had a discussion, there's no way we'd be on the same page. I mean, we just live two just totally different world, realities of life.
Yeah, you're not wrong. And it changes. It skews who you are and how you think. And there's some you agree with, some you don't. The bigger bottom line for me is Reign of Fire any good or not? And we'll find out next week.
Yes, exactly. Yes, we will. Yeah. So excited.
And I think it'll be great. Filmsack.com in the meantime is our website. So if you'd like to go over there and just get all the archives or do whatever, contact us, find all the details. It's there. Filmsack.com. Filmsack@gmail.com is our email address. Keep those emails coming. You guys are awesome. But, you know, stop talking about that one we talked about this week, please.
Stop bringing up
that. Yeah, we're done with that one. On Twitter, we're at FilmSack. And, of course, if you find the show wherever you get your podcast, whatever directory you're inclined to, leave us reviews wherever they are because it helps us get noticed and discovered by people who don't know about one of the longest running film shows in the history of the medium. So go check it out. All right, that's going to do it for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
How about tofu?
Well, ugh. Oh, yeah, tofu. You can make anything out of tofu. We'll see you next time.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes. Get more at frogpants.com.